And welcome to this edition of the Chasing Past Goal podcast, where in this one I will be trying to go alone, so bear with me. And I do not want to try and bring my monotone voice for too long. So we'll start off with a recap of last week. So we had some fantastic events. So we'll start off with Mathieu Pavon becoming the first French player in 117 years to win on the PGA Tour with a stunning victory at the Farmers Insurance Open. Pavon, he's come on leaps and bounds in these past few months, so fair play to the guy. It was a fantastic, especially the third shot at the 18th, the 72nd hole, to do that under that amount of pressure takes a certain amount of stones to do. So that's fair play, and good to see him get a victory because he started the season well. And certainly he's got his season up and running, and it's been a strong start. So fair play to Mathieu Pavon. Technically Martin Trainer is French, so technically Pavon should be the second Frenchman to win on the PGA Tour. Don't know what you think about that, but fair play to the guy. That was a good finish there. We on the DP World Tour, Thorbjørn Olesen won for the 8th time. I did mention briefly with Craig Edwards last week that I thought Olesen, he's playing well, he tends to play well in these events. Just thought he was a little bit short, but understandable. Obviously he gets the job done. Pretty convincing in the end by 6 shots to Rasmus Højgaard. Olesen is world class at DP World Tour level. I'm surprised he's not gone to the PGA Tour yet to start his season. That's a little bit interesting. He has withdrawn from the Bahrain event this week. So maybe he just needs that extra week before going on to the PGA Tour. But yeah, Thorbjørn Olesen, 8-time winner now, serious closer. His last 2 victories have come at 25 and 27 under par. So especially when he gets that putter rolling, he's so lethal, it's ridiculous. In terms of that event, from a pitch point of view, Lombard started well, was their majority of the event, and then kind of faltered away a little bit at the end, while other players were picking up their scores and picking up birdies. So it was a disappointing one on that point of view, but no one was catching Olesen really, like not even Rasmus. I mean, to be fair, to have Nikolai and Rasmus both finish second in the same week on 2 different tours, that was pretty cool in its own right. So, fair play to Olesen. I'm sure when he comes back on the DP World Tour, he's going to be even shorter, and he probably will win again at some point. In terms of an event at Razzle Karma, we kind of got down to a tee. It's a birdie fest. It's all about making your putts, making your scores, and Olesen done that better than pretty much anyone. So in terms of that, as I say, he's different gravy. Certainly won't be the last time he wins in the DP World Tour when he comes back. So I think the event of the week and the event of the year, actually, already has to be that has to be the LPGA drive on championships where that was the most ridiculous finish I think I've ever seen, or certainly seen in a long, long time. Nelly Korda with a four shot lead going into the final round of the LPGA Drive on Championships. You think Nelly Korda would kind of lap it up, being in her hometown of Bradenton in Florida. Was one over par for the first nine on the Sunday, and then she pretty much started to collapse and was very, very poor coming down the stretch, and then got to the stage where Korda was making bogeys and obviously playing with her best friend and fellow podcast guest Megan Kang. Was that a distraction? Possibly. I mean, it's never easy to play with one of your good friends in a competitive tournament, especially on a final day. So maybe on Kang's point of view, that was off-putting playing with Nelly as well. I mean, certainly whatever mistakes Nelly was doing, Megan Kang was given the chances, but she just couldn't convert and was basically doing what Nelly was doing. So, yeah, that was a strange one in that regard. Then it looked like at one point Lydia Ko was gonna win, and then she started making some bogeys, and then we seen a double bogey from Nelly Korda to go back to 9-under, where I believe at the time it was Korda, Ko and Megan Kang all 9-under, and then all of a sudden at 17th hole, Lydia Ko thins her second shot at the par 5 17th to 3 feet. Initially she absolutely hated the shot. It looked like it was destined for the water at one point, but took a lucky bounce and ended up going to 3 feet for a tapping eagle, and that kind of put the advantage in her favour with a two shot lead. Then Nelly makes another bogey to go back to 8-under, so that gives Lydia Ko a three shot lead going into that 18th hole, looking pretty comfortable. All of a sudden, within inches of going for that win that would put her into the LPGA Hall of Fame with 21. And then all of a sudden, Nelly Korda from the back of the green at 17, she makes a clutch eagle putt to go back within one, going into the final hole, the 72nd hole. She puts it in the fairway on the 18th hole, and it looks like it was a little bit of a more difficult lie than what it looked like. And then all of a sudden, from absolutely nowhere, she plays an absolute dream shot, and at one point nearly curled in the hole, to be honest, to kind of go eagle, but that would have been some spectacle there. But no, she put towards 2 foot, or around about 2 foot for a tapping birdie that got her to the playoff with Lydia Ko, and then the first playoff hole, Lydia Ko, she puts a wide of the green next to the kind of the bouquet of flowers and champagne that was perhaps going to her if she managed to get the job done. And then played a lovely shot to within tapping range to kind of extend, or to kind of make Nelly Korda make the putt that she had to convert, where Nelly missed, went back to the second playoff hole. Same thing kind of happened, but roles reversed this time with Lydia Ko on the ledge of the green, pin high, and then Nelly Korda, she put her second shot underneath the grandstand. I mean, imagine being in that grandstand and you're like, "Whoa, there's Nelly Korda's ball." I'd be like, "Yep," but yeah, put a decent shot back up to within about 5 feet for a par. Lydia Ko had her chance to win it. With that second shot. The putt came up short, was pretty tentative over it, and gave herself a little bit of a difficult putt back up the hill to kind of to put the pressure on Nelly. It was Ko to go first, and it lips the hole. It lips a hole with the par putt, which ultimately cost Lydia Ko the chance of LPGA immortality. Well, at least for the now. I do reckon she will. She will get another win this year. And five feet left for Nelly Korda in her hometown. Centre of the cup to win her ninth LPGA Tour title and her first in 14 months since November 2022. A lot has happened in that time. She's had surgery on a blood clot and stuff like that. So in terms of that, I was absolutely delighted for Nelly Korda, as I think a lot of people will know that Nelly Korda is my favourite women's golfer, to be honest. Everything about her is absolutely fantastic. So to see Nelly back in the winner's circle was unbelievable. In terms of the picks in that event, Ayaka Furui was right up there for majority of the event, but all of a sudden on the back nine seemed to like slip away, but she did finish tied fourth. So small returns on that for the LPGA Drive-On Championships, with the Furui finishing tied fourth. But ultimately it was an unbelievable spectacle and a great course in Bradenton, Florida. It was tough conditions and very windy, and that kind of added to the fun as such. So yeah, for me, the Drive-On Championship so far was the best tournament of the year so far. So that's going to take a lot of living up to try and get there in terms of the drama, the quality. But to see Nelly Korda and Lydia Ko both challenging it out, two of the very, very, very best in the world. I mean, it was a pretty special event, pretty special battening. So we're going to the politics of the golfing world, which is obviously LIV Golf, which this week seen the, maybe not surprising as some might think, in terms of perhaps the reason why Adrian Meronk went to LIV Golf. He joins Martin Kaymer, Richard Bland and Cali Samoria in the Cliques Golf for the LIV season this year. But I think the timing of it, in terms of Meronk, he worked his arse off to try and get a full PGA Tour card, mysteriously withdraws from the Farmers, and then about a day later, it's confirmed that he's signed for LIV Golf. Kind of strange reason. kind of strange way, maybe, to go about it. But I think he's still very, very salty with Luke Donald, with the way he got snubbed, especially at the core. Especially winning at the course that the Ryder Cup was at the Marco Simone. So that's definitely a factor in the move to LIV. But yeah, I mean, Adrian Meronk, he was a player I like, or still like, but yeah, the decision to move there is a little bit of a strange one, and it's going to take a little bit of time to process why. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, you can kind of get it with the whole Donald saga. So yeah, Meronk moved to LIV Golf, and then the one that's just happened in the last couple of days is the world number 16, Tyrrell Hatton. He's joined John Rahm and his new Legion side on the LIV Golf. So it's going to be John Rahm, Kieran Vincent, Caleb Surratt, the amateur that played in the Walker Cup, and Tyrrell Hatton for the new side. Tyrrell, I kind of put in my chat, in the Chasing Pars chat, that that he's kind of one that I've not really been arsed with for a good while now. I think he even admitted, since the whole Tyrrell Hatton hoodie gate at Wentworth, I think that was the last time I really paid much attention and kind of enjoyed Hatton as such. I just think in terms of his shenanigans on the golf course, I mean, it kind of does my head in a little bit, and it's definitely all for cameras. But I mean, for a PGA Tour point of view, it's another one of the top 20 players in the world that's going to LIV Golf. Further strengthens their product as such. Some might say, oh, he's only got the one win in 122 starts or whatever it is on the PGA Tour. That coming at the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. Agree to disagree in some ways. I mean, I agree that it will be a loss to the PGA Tour. I disagree that the PGA Tour certainly they have the players to kind of fill the void left by Tyrrell Hatton's departure. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see the fallout from that, especially with Hatton being a mainstay in the Ryder Cup for the past two Ryder Cups. I'm guessing with John Rahm's departure, and he's definitely going to be at Bethpage in 2025. So they are going to have to mend the rules as such. So I reckon Hatton squeezes in via that as well. So that's a live fallout. For anybody that likes the LIV products, I've certainly been open and honest about how I've not really paid much attention to it. For people that like it, I mean, each to their own. I'm not going to berate you for that, but yeah, the LIV Golf Mayakoba starts this week, so there's another event for you to kind of enjoy if you like the LIV product. So. Actually, speaking of the LIV product, the recent episode that I've just published with Sean Norris, 11-time winner on the at pro level, 6-time Japanese Tour winner, DP World Tour winner with in the co-sanctioned Stain City event in 2022. But in terms of Norris, he in the inaugural season of LIV Golf, was one of the ones that went to try his hand at LIV Golf for 7 events. We found out in that episode that he played in 3 teams with Dustin Johnson and the Aces, Bryson DeChambeau and the Crushers, and the all South Africa team of Louis Oosthuizen and Charles Swartzel and Brandon Grace for the Stingers. So he kind of goes on a little bit about what it was like to play with them guys, but in terms of Norris, if you're kind of into the LIV product, maybe that's an episode for you to kind of listen to as Sean goes into what it was like on the LIV Golf Tour. So yeah, all of the recent player interviews are all on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. So definitely check that out. Before I go into who I fancy for this week's events on the DP World Tour and on the PGA Tour, kind of want to give a shout out to recent podcast guest and now a 3-time winner on the Sunshine Tour in absolutely sensational fashion, winning by 4 to the very experienced and dangerous at that level, Neil Skettycat, Ryan Van Velsen. Absolutely sensational performance by the 22-year-old sensation. That's 3 times he's won now on the Sunshine Tour in 10 months. So he plays in the co-sanctioned event. So the co-sanctioned Challenge Tour and Sunshine Tour event that's back this week is Zebula. Wouldn't surprise me if he challenged again, or maybe even won again, to be honest. Van Velsen, he's that good, and specifically in the conversation with him on site that week, he sounded like he was massively up for it, and no surprise to see him win again, as he's a fantastic talent. And also, quickly to on the Australian Tour, to back-to-back weeks, the very, very talented Kazuma Kibori wins again in Australia for the second week in a row, after his maiden success in Australia the week prior. Yeah, I mean, in my chat with Sam Jones, we talk about how good this kid could be, Kazuma Kibori, and it's a very good listen. The young Kiwi player definitely has all the tools to go well at different levels when the time is right. He could dominate the Australian Tour for the next wee while. Until he steps up, at least. Definitely, he's becoming an absolute danger man on that tour. So, now fair play to the young Kiwi player Kibori. He's another special talent along with Van Velsen. So there's two to keep an eye on the progress, as such, in the next wee while. So just give me 1 second while I quickly take a drink. Because I feel like my voice is gonna go dry very, very shortly. So just give me 1 second. So in terms of this week's events, so we've got the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. A little bit of a mixed reception relationship with this event in terms of the course at Pebble Beach. Nothing against it. It's still one of the most recognisable courses in world golf. The prestige and history there No kind of complaints. It's still on the schedule. The only thing that bothers me about this event is obviously it's a pro-am, so in terms of your Bill Murrays and all that shite that comes with it, I really can't be arsed with that shit. So that kind of adds to the hate as such. I mean, each to their own. People might enjoy the amateurs playing with the pros, but yeah, definitely not for me. But there's been a change to the kind of format as such this week, so it's a 80 player event with no cut. It's a signature event, so we've got all the best players in the world, from your Rory McIlroys, Scotty Scheffler, Victor Hovland, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay's, all of them are playing this week, so it should be a much improved event. And instead of the three course rotation, they're only playing the two with Pebble Beach and Spyglass Hill playing host, and the amateurs are only playing the Thursday and Friday, I believe, this year. So for the Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be the pros only, and that'll only add to the excitement as such. So yeah, it should be a good event. I'm not going to take you through the odds list because I don't want to be on record for that long, well, on my own chatting shit, because I'll be there for an hour or so. So I'm just going to kind of take you through who I kind of like this week's for Pebble Beach. So I'll start off with Justin Thomas, who I fancy from the top of the market at 22-1. I seen definite improvements in Justin Thomas's game on his last appearance at the American Express, when he finished tied third for me. Finished at 27 under, only took a superb performance from like Nick Dunlap to kind of, in a way, diminish the kind of improvements in Thomas's game that week. Yeah, I mean, tied third in his last appearance. I just think this is gonna be a big year for Justin Thomas, to be honest. With the Ryder Cup and stuff in 2025, he'll definitely still want to be in with a shout come that end, come that time, sorry. Yeah, I've seen enough improvements in the Justin Thomas game at the Amex to kind of warrant the price at 22-1. I wouldn't be surprised if Justin Thomas is right up there again. His iron play is still pretty decent. Still worry sometimes a little bit with JT with the putter, but anything above average, you should still be challenging. So I just thought that the Justin Thomas price at 22-1, when you got the likes of, no disrespect to Homa, he's a fantastic player, but like he's like about 4 to 6 points shorter than Justin Thomas. You got Cantlay, who's shorter than Thomas. Obviously, Schauffele is shorter than Thomas as well. So Spieth would have been one. That would have been the other one if I had took Thomas, but it was I had to pick between the two, and I went with JT. I hope that he's found something in his game to definitely challenge the top kind of 10 players in the world again, because we all know how good Justin Thomas is. could win number 14 be there for Justin Thomas either this week or in the next kind of few months? I'll say yes. So, 22-1 on Justin Thomas feels decent value to me in this kind of signature event. So we'll go with that and hope that Thomas kind of finds Sahan again with the putter, because certainly on his last appearance at the Amex was definitely 100% improvement. I've got 250-1. So the one that kind of stood out to me, he was on everyone's radar for the Farmers last week and missed the cut. I kind of said that in the preview that I kind of shied away from Jason Day a little bit last week because I thought it was going to be the Twitter curse, and I was kind of right in the end. Missed the cut. Obviously, he's a two-time champion at the Farmers Insurance, so I had to take that with a pinch of salt, but ultimately it was a good decision. But I'm not going to let that one miscut at the Farmers Insurance Open kind of diminish the kind of form that he has at Pebble Beach. And It's just one of them courses that I always feel that Jason Day is going to go well at, and he's got a good record here. He's playing better, albeit the miscut last week. But there was signs in the first couple of events that he was starting to play well again. He won the kind of, we call it an exhibition as such, with Lydia Ko at the Grant Thornton Invitational at the back end of December. That would have certainly put his confidence up. Just think Jason Day at that number at 50-1 is too big on a course that he has played well a fair few times. So, Day for me was kind of standout value in that mid-range. Another one was Russell Henley at 50-1. Russell Henley. Where do you start with Russell Henley? I mean, very frustrating one. Very frustrating player, for sure. He's still one of the best ball strikers in the world. Still has his troubles sometimes on the greens, but I just feel like Russell Henley these days is more often than not, if he plays well, he's going to be in the top kind of 10 to 20 most weeks. And he's got form at the Sony Open in Hawaii, previous champion of that, so He's kind of got form on the kind of courses. And Russell Henley could have a five shot lead, and you still not feel comfortable at all. But that's just the kind of price you've got to take with a player of Henley's stature. I do feel like 50-1 is a pretty decent value though for a guy that we know can play well and can light it up at any time of the season. So Henley at 50-1. Brian Harman 66-1. What the fuck is going on here, by the way? I mean, we all know he likes short courses, short coastal courses. He's still one of the best putters in the world, even though his putter must weigh about 55 tons. I mean, 66-1 for the current Open champion. I took him in the first event of the season at Century, where he was top five and top ten every week. Top ten all week. Sorry. 66-1 on the way Harman plays right now. These days. That's It's kind of a little bit scary value, to be honest. Pebble Beach is one of them courses that should suit him down to the ground. We know how good he is with the putter. When the putter starts rolling, I just don't see how he doesn't contend in the top 10 this week. He's just a whole different player now. 66-1 on a current major champion. I mean, certainly worth value. That's for sure. I'll just put it that way. And the last one for me at 80-1. No surprises about it, because I put him as my number one player to watch in the PGA Tour this year. The kind of resurrection as such of Brendan Todd. Brendan Todd had him at Century, was going so well until he broke his driver head. And that was him pretty much fucked for the rest of the round. I mean, back to back solid enough weeks at the Century and the Sony Open. He's had a rest since then. I'm hoping that he's found a new driver. Certainly can he imagine him playing a full round or a full four rounds even with no visible driver in the bag. That'd be hard to fathom as such, but no, Brendan Todd 80-1 seems a very good value. He's an R1 that kind of likes coastal courses and has some form there. I just think for someone that's improving again, he's becoming more consistent, and obviously I make no secret that he's got one of the world's best caddies on the bag for him in Paul Tesori. So certainly there's worse value out there than 80-1 on someone that's one of the straightest hitters on tour, and he can putt pretty well when given the chance. Just kind of got to take that chance on Brendan Todd to find something with a putter, but when he does, no reason why he doesn't contend. Yeah, so it should be an interesting event when the signature status at Pebble Beach this week. I mean, no cut, it's a little bit annoying, but it's what it is. It's managed to get the best players in the world, as was often one of the weakest fields, certainly on the West Coast. Struggled to attract the big names, etc. So for signature status, I mean, should add a little bit of value to that this week in terms of a bigger watch, less kind of frustration with the amateurs as such. And back to two courses, and it should be a good one. And on the DP World Tour this week, we've got a kind of another inaugural event as such in the Bahrain Championship, which is new to the DP World Tour schedule this year. So not sure really what to expect as such. But with Bahrain being right next to Qatar in ways, we know that Qatar can be quite windy. So I wouldn't put it past there being some wind to cause havoc a little bit this week at Bahrain. That's kind of what I hope for anyway. I prefer them tests with the wind and such to events like last week where it was 27 under. That's just my preference, it always has been. but they're playing at the Royal Golf Course in Bahrain. It's a Colin Montgomery design in 2008. It's been playing, I believe it's the MENA Tour, a few MENA Tour events over the past, so 2020, 2019, and 2018. We haven't seen this on the main tour as such since one of the champions events, which was won by Paul Casey in 2011 at 20 under. So that was 20 under in 2011. Kind of hoping that it's maybe a little bit tougher than the 20 under, but it's hard to judge. But certainly my main pick as such this week has got that kind of Qatar factor. If it does get windy, he's a winner of the Qatar Masters and stuff, so certainly kind of hoping for that as such, for the wind to get up a little bit to make things a little bit more challenging as such. But so I've got five again for Bahrain Championship. So we'll start off with, it was like Spieth and Thomas in Pebble Beach. It was a toss of a coin between experience and my first pick that I've went for, or the hugely talented young Japanese Keita Nakajima, who's very, very popular this week, with good reason. I kind of went for the experience of Antoine Rosner at 30-1. I just feel, although Nakajima's a fantastic player and he's going to be a superstar, finished fourth last week, I just feel with the, as I alluded to, with it being very close to Qatar, and Qatar's kind of reputation for being quite windy at times, and certainly had that kind of in ways in my mind that that Rosner should be challenging this week at Bahrain, especially if it gets windy. He won the Qatar Masters at 7 under, or 7 or 8 under, can't remember from the top of my head. But yeah, he's won there in very tough windy conditions. He's won in Mauritius as well, which is another place that can get quite windy. He's actually started his season relatively well, to be honest, with a tie 32nd in the first event and tie 16th on his last event in the Dubai Desert Classic, which was a decent field as well. Never played last week at Ras Al Khaimah. So I'm hoping he's been kind of still grinding as such, trying to find something, trying to improve on two respectable finishes to start the season. But Rosner's a winner, and certainly with the Qatar and Mauritius kind of wins and the links there, kind of preferred Rosner's experience as such to the high ceiling and highly thought of Keita Nakajima. So Rosner for me at 30-1. Felt like decent value to me. So my next one is Calum Shinklin at 66-1. He was another one that last week started off like a train with a opening round of 62, 10 under, was up there, was the 18 hole leader and 36 hole leader, and then kind of went backwards as such on Saturday that kind of cost him in the end. Found it a little bit again on the Sunday, but it was a little bit too late, but still finished tie fourth. Which was a respectable finish considering he's been a little bit patchy as of late. So, but yeah, Shink went off of his fourth last week at Ras Al Khaimah. When he does get going, he's a very good player, and he's definitely one that can challenge. And 66-1 for a player that we do know has that winning mentality about him, in a slightly lesser field as such, seems like relatively good value. So yeah, 66-1 on Callum Shinklin is my second one. Another player that finished in the top five last week, at 80-1 this week, is Maxi Kiefer, who I did have a few times last year on the DP World Tour. He obviously at some times he flattered to deceive, but more often than not, his name did kind of pop up on the leaderboard as such quite a fair bit. So yeah, I mean, he's a good player, Maxi Kiefer. He's still only got the one win in his DP World Tour career and a fair bit on tour now, but I believe he's improving as a player, and yeah, certainly off that fourth place finish last week, and he's another one that can lay it up at any point of the season and be in contention. And I also feel that 80-1 feels like pretty relatively decent value for a player of Kiefer's ability. Two long shots this week, so start off with Jack Krozvik at 150-1. If any South Africans are listening, please correct my pronunciation. I know that's fucking wrong, but terrible. But yeah, I mean, Jacques was pretty much maybe the form of his career at the tail end of last year, in the middle of the year on the Challenge Tour, on Sunshine Tour and Challenge Tour, won two events in a short space of time after returning from an injury. Played pretty well in a couple of the events on the DP World Tour towards the end of the year. Started up his season last week in SA at the Mediclinic Invitational, on the Sunshine Tour. I think that was just kind of a tune-up to being back on the DP World Tour as such. Yeah, I mean, he's a player that definitely has the game to go well. Just kind of maybe struggled a little bit with consistency over the past couple of seasons or stuff when he has been fit from injury. Recently got engaged, so that's the kind of Strokes Gain marriage factor as such you can kind of implement. But no, 150-1 on a player that was showing signs of life on the main tour towards the end of last season, in a weekend event, I think that's pretty good value. To be fair, I actually rate Jacques Krozvik as a very good player actually, and maybe at 150-1, yeah, could be one to watch this week. And the last one, also at 150-1. I think he might be the most tipped this week on Golf Tips Checker, so double check with that, with good reason. It's the now Emirati based Joshua Grenville Wood, who now represents the UAE He started the season on limited starts on the DP World Tour in the Middle East events pretty well. He's had his name up there challenging quite a bit over the past couple of weeks. He's only 25 years old. I reckon with the invitations into the Middle East, obviously being now representing the UAE, I think he's just got that kind of stress-free release maybe. Like he can just go up and just play as well as he can, and maybe he'll earn future invites into events on the DP World Tour as a result. But he's certainly a boy that does have talent. Still only young. Actually, the main thing about this course at the Royal Golf Club, as I alluded to, played host to MENA Tour events, and second in 2019 was Joshua Grenville Woods. So he's had that course experience as such. He's had that second place finish at the course. Should know the course better than most folk. He's been playing relatively fairly decent over the past few weeks or so. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be probably the most tipped, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's there again in the top 10 and such this week. Feels like a little bit of value for a guy that knows the course and is it's kind of got that the shackles off as such in terms of playing stress-free golf. So that's the I do apologize for the coughing as such. I'm still kind of recovering as such. I know that I've got the most monotone voice in the whole world, and specifically after 52 minutes, I wouldn't be surprised if people have switched off as such, but if you have tuned in, I do appreciate it. It's actually really tough on my own, I'm not gonna lie. I actually struggled a little bit there, but yeah, we got through it. So yeah, I mean, we've got DP World Tour, PGA Tour. The LPGA Tour is now on a month hiatus until the end of February, which, to be honest, after that finish is a little bit disappointing. The LET season starts next week. The Ladies European Tour is back. Back this week is the Challenge Tour, which is co-sanctioned with the Sunshine Tour. So quite a lot of the podcast guests from SA are playing in that event. So Van Velzen, Luca Felipe, Dejan Hermes, Martin Brosster, yeah, Peter Millman, players like that. And we've got a couple of other players from that are starting their Challenge Tour seasons. So Martin Simonsen, who was on in December, and Georgie Bleuler, who I believe this week at first glance is 250-1. This is a player that's been winning lots of pro-ams in the past few months. He's been in Dubai for the past 3 weeks, grinding his arse off, winning pro-am events, massively preparing for the start of the Challenge Tour season. If you listen to the 2024 kind of season, well, the 2023 recap, and looking forward to the 2024 season, at the very end, I put two names out for who I'm looking forward to the most on the Challenge Tour: Brandon Robinson-Thompson and George Blair were the two players that I plucked out from there. So be keeping tabs on both Martin and George, as well as the South African boys. Hopefully every one of them go well this week, and yeah, it's good to have the Challenge Tour back. It's gonna be a good year for the Challenge Tour, I think. And one thing to note, no Brandon Robinson-Thompson, who I believe has visa issues, or struggling to get a visa
or they're taking too long to get him a visa. But he'll be back soon, and hopefully be good to see BRT back in action in the next few weeks and hopefully win. So, but until then, 55 minutes in, you're probably tuned off, but yeah, I'll go now, because I'm boring people shitless now, but but yeah, all the best if you're having a punt this week on either Bahrain or Pebble Beach, and let's hopefully, fingers crossed, for a winner. Cheers everyone if you have listened, thank you.